Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, social justice, or different cultures. Today, my visitor is Brother Matthew. Brother Matthew, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Thank you very much.
Brother Matthew is from the Tézé community in France, and this community was founded by Brother Roger of Tézé. And in the previous Muffin Talk, Sister Anne Warren talked about Brother Roger, or Brother Roger, as she called him, and about his life a little bit. But maybe you'd ask Brother Matthew, can you give us a background of Brother Roger of Tézé and of the Tézé community? How did it all start?
Well, Brother Roger, he arrived in Tézé in 1940. It was during the time of the Second World War. He grew up in Switzerland, and his grandmother was of an old French family, and she'd lived in France during the time of the First World War. She'd seen a lot of suffering. She'd done all she could to help those people who were in difficulty, but in the end she returned to the family in Switzerland. And Brother Roger always used to tell the story about how she arrived exhausted, and she said, "I don't want anybody to see what I've seen." Christians, they speak about a God of love, but they don't love each other. If they could show that they love each other, perhaps more people would believe in the gospel, and there'd be a greater chance for peace in the world. And that was something that stayed in the heart of Brother Roger as he was growing up, these words of his grandmother. And he began to reflect more and more, what does it mean to follow Christ? What does it mean to live the gospel today? And remembering those words, he thought, well, I'd like very much to start a community that might be monastic, where Christians of different denominations would live together, a sign of unity. But he was from the Reformed tradition, and there was no monastic tradition within his church. When he was studying theology, he wrote his dissertation on the conformity of the monastic rules up until Saint Benedict with the gospel. And there we see already the kind of reconciliation that was working within him between his Reformed faith and the wider monastic, perhaps we could even say Catholic, tradition. And when he'd finished his studies, then he felt the moment had come to begin this life in community. He wanted to be like his grandmother, to be close to those people who were suffering. He felt it was there that he was called to live the gospel. And so he left Switzerland, which was neutral during the war, and travelled into France. And along the way, he looked at one or two houses where perhaps a community could start. But he felt it was too close to Switzerland. He feared his family would come and visit too much. And he continued to a little town called Cluny, where there was a very, very important monastery in the Middle Ages, but which at the time of the French Revolution had been destroyed.
Saint Bernard.
Yep. No, that's Clairvaux.
Ah, Clairvaux.
That's Clairvaux. There was Peter the Venerable, who was in Cluny. And he arrived in Cluny, looked at the abbey ruins, and then there was the real estate agent that he spoke with, and he said, there's a house in Tézé. And so Brother Roger arrived there. And it was a deserted village. There was only very, very poor people there. But when he spoke to them, told them of his project, then they said, stay with us. And for him, that was like the cry of the poor, something that came from God. And the first 2 years, 1940 to 42, he lived alone, and he was part of a chain of safe houses, and he welcomed people whose lives were in danger, people of Jewish background, also political resistance, and helped them find their way to Switzerland. And then during the Second World War, France was divided in two. Yeah, and Tézé was just in the southern part, which was free but under a puppet government. And then in 1942, the Nazis took over the whole of the country. And he was in Switzerland at that time visiting his family and realized that it was too dangerous to come back, so he stayed in Switzerland. And then in 1944, at the liberation, he returned with the first brothers and the community life began.
Yep. So it was maybe it was a sign of God that he happened to be in Switzerland yep. during the most dangerous time for him.
Yeah, and he often used to say to us, but when he was, because he was alone during those first 2 years, and he would often say in his prayers, God, if necessary, take my life, but help the vision that I've had for a community of reconciliation continue.
But at that time, it was still a very small young plant, yep. so it was important for him to return.
Yep, yep, exactly. Yes. And you know, those first years, the brothers, the first ones were all from Switzerland. And then I think there were German and Dutch brothers, French brothers and Dutch brothers, yeah, who joined. And by the early 50s, they were 9 or 10. But he'd imagined just a small community of 12 brothers. It seems it was a real question when the 13th came along. Shall we accept him or not? Thankfully, they did. The community life grew. Yeah, and it was...
How many do you have now?
Well, now we're more or less 100.
Oh, my yeah. God. Yeah. Imagine him at the beginning of his life in Tézé. He yeah. would not have believed it.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's true. It's true.
Yeah. Well, for those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ibsen. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/Muffin Talk or visit our website or Facebook page at Tengaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Center. My visitor today is Brother Matthew from Tézé, and we've just heard about the community of Tézé and how it all started. Brother Matthew, I understand that Brother Roger, let's say Roger, yep. as the New mm-hmm. Zealanders say, believed in working and praying rather than receiving donations.
Yes.
This reminds me of the Benedictine rule, yep. ora yep. et labora. Mm-hmm. Is that still the case and is that
yes.
true?
Yeah, no, that's something that he was very, very clear on. You know, that as a community of brothers, we should live only from our own work. Yeah, I think at the beginning it was difficult for him. Yeah, and he always used to say his father told him, you'll never manage. And he said, well, I'll learn to milk cows. At first it was very difficult for the brothers.
When he was on his own, what did he live off?
Well, he told us he used to make nettle soup and there were lots of snails around. Yeah. And so he used to...
A lot of protein.
It was difficult. It was very difficult for him. And the first brothers at the beginning, they started really not knowing what to do. And there were some involved in agricultural work. One brother was a doctor. He was the local doctor. And then they developed pottery, ceramics. And that became the, and still is, the thing through which... the community earns its living.
So you sell pottery?
We sell pottery in Tézé. And then there's also...
You must produce a lot of pottery with 100 brothers.
Well, not all of them work in the pottery. If I worked in the pottery, I think we'd go bankrupt. Yeah. but we try to find the way for each brother to express his calling. And some are very gifted.
What is your gift?
What's my gift? I don't know. That's for others to discern. But I work a lot with our new brothers. And then I help with the Bible studies. And then there are various... Some of the brothers we have countries entrusted to us. And I work a lot with the people who come from Russia and from the Swedes. And then also because my family, although we're British, my family all live in South Australia. So I also meet with the Australians and the New Zealanders. And then when I come and visit my family, then I do a few kind of pastoral visits, meetings, prayers.
And then you come over the ditch.
And this time I've come over the ditch, yeah.
And can you just describe a little bit how the setting of Tézé is now? Because it started with one house.
Yeah.
And then if you have pottery, you need some workplace. But now you've grown so much. How does it look like? Is it still a little village in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, no, Teze is a small village in the middle of nowhere, exactly. But I think the major difference between when Brother Roger arrived and now is the fact that we welcome large numbers of young people throughout the year, but especially at times like Easter and the summer, the European summer. There can be 4,000 or 5,000 young people there
at the
each
same
week.
Time.
Yeah. And this began in the 1960s, and at first the brothers were very afraid, and they built a house 4 kilometers away from Teze, said to these young people, "You can stay there," but they kept coming. And again, Brother Roger realized, but God is asking us to welcome these people. And so a lot of our energy, you know, goes into offering hospitality towards these young people, walking with them on their faith journey.
Where do they all stay? Do they have tents or do...
Yeah, we have dormitory accommodation for around 2,000. And then others in summer especially will bring tents. Life in Teze is very, very simple. The food is very simple. The living conditions are very simple. But all the young people who come, then they take part in the life of the community. And that means prayer 3 times a day. It means as well listening to a Bible study each morning. It means times of sharing with other young people of your age, but from different countries. It means helping with the practical running of the site. And they usually come for a full week from Sunday through to Sunday.
And are these groups or are they also young people who come on their own?
It's very mixed. You know, sometimes it's groups organized from parishes or from chaplaincies. But there are also friends who come together or individual young people who are just passing through. You know, some of them have church background, but there are also a lot of people who are searching. Yeah, and when they come, we don't ask them too many questions. We try to welcome them as they are. The only expectation is that they're ready to take part in the life of the community. This mixture, you know, of people who are searching and people who feel they already have faith, it's often very enriching mutually.
And do you ask them questions or do they have to apply or can they just arrive?
They can just arrive. It's true, we prefer if they can register beforehand. We, on our website, you know, there is a contact form that you fill out to register, and especially if you're coming with a group, that's important. But normally for the young people, if they just turn up, we won't turn them away.
And do they arrive on train or bus or car? Is there a train close to...
You can get a train to one of the nearby towns, and then there's a bus connection. Yeah,
okay.
So it's by public transport. It's possible to reach Teze.
Yeah, and I understand that the first church in Teze was called the Church of Reconciliation, and Brother Roger thought first it's way too big.
Yeah,
and now it's too small. Is that true?
Yeah, no, that's true. At the beginning, the brothers prayed in the house. And then they received permission. Remember, they were all from Protestant backgrounds at the beginning. They received permission to pray in the village church of Teze, which is a small Romanesque church. But then, with many visitors coming, that became quickly too small. And then they built in 1962 the Church of Reconciliation. And when Brother Roger saw it, he thought, it's too large, it's too big. He said he couldn't speak for 3 days. It seemed so huge. But very quickly, that church became too small. And so they broke down the back wall of the church and attached a circus tent, you know, for the times when there were a lot of visitors. And now we have some extensions on the back of the church, which we use, and that's easier to pray in than a circus tent.
Yeah, and I also think in Teze there is a winter.
Yeah, but no, it's quite mild. It's a bit like the Wellington or the Auckland winter, I think, yeah.
And I understand that you came also a few years ago to New Zealand together with Brother Alois, a German, and Brother Ghislain from Belgium, and they are both Catholics. And you are Anglican, right?
Yep, my background's in the Anglican Church.
So does the denomination play any role in your community?
I think each one of us, we carry with us the heritage of our mother churches, these churches through which we first received faith. But the essential of our life in Teze is living a sign of reconciliation, a sign of unity in Christ. And so there's that trust that each brother is ready to welcome the other with their difference. Yeah, and we don't have, you know, the solutions to all the big questions, but we live a simple sign to say, yes, it is possible as Christians to live together, to pray together, to share together.
And so there are there people from different Protestant churches within the brothers?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. No, all the main historical Protestant churches are represented, I think. And then from the Catholic Church, there are no Orthodox brothers. Yeah, for the moment, we have many visitors from the Orthodox churches who come, but no one who's a member of the community itself.
Yeah. And when you talk about the community with 100 people, how does that work? Can you tell us more about you're living all in the same building and have little separate communities, or are you always one? How can I imagine it?
Yeah, well, the essential of our life is the common prayer, you know, and I think that's what binds us together. When you pray together with others, then there's a link which forms. And yeah, in Teze itself, we're in fact about 70. In total, we're 100. There are also smaller groups of brothers who live elsewhere on the other continents. But it's true that when you're 70 or so men living together, then I have to say that sometimes you rub shoulders, yeah, and your elbows get grazed. But I think for me, the times of prayer are essential, because when we come together in the church, then it's a time of recentering. I realize that I'm there not because of myself and my own opinions, but I'm there because of Christ. And that changes the way in which I look at my brother, changes perhaps the way I look at a moment of tension or a moment of disagreement that there may have been. And when you leave the church, then very often there's something that's changed in your heart. We have a series of stained glass windows in our church, and which represent different moments of the life of Jesus. And the last window that we the brothers we see when we leave the church, it's a representation of the Transfiguration. And that, for me, that's very powerful, because it helps me understand that even if I didn't feel as if I was having a very intimate time with God during the prayer, there's something that's been given during that prayer which has transfigured me, which has enabled me to look at things in a different way.
Mm. Are there also sisters of Teze?
There are no sisters of Teze as such, but when we started to welcome young people in larger numbers in the 1960s, Brother Roger realized, especially for the pastoral work with the young women, that the presence of sisters was very important. But instead of simply founding a new community of sisters, he understood that there were many good communities existing already. And in 1966, the Sisters of St. Andrew, a Belgian community, came and have been with us ever since. There's a second community of Polish sisters, who are Ursuline sisters, who are there as well since 25 years, I think. And without these sisters, it would be impossible to do what we do in Teze. But they have their own community life, their own times of prayer. And that's good, because it means that each community has its own identity. It's not that one is being absorbed by the other. And each can make its own decisions. There's no question about who's in charge or something like this. And I think that's very healthy. You know, there's a close collaboration, but a respect of the identity, you know, of each community.
And you mentioned that Brother Roger started in 1940,
yeah,
which means that in 2020 it'll be exactly 70 years. What what has changed?
80 years.
Oh, yep. My God. 80 years. Yep. What has changed in these 80 years?
Oh, that's a good question.
Because except for the numbers, of course, yep. You start with yep. one person. Yep. But I think that with so many problems in the world,
yep. Yep.
and you had the 1960s where you had the student revolution, yep. You had the Cuba crisis, you had mm-hmm. Cold War, you had a lot of things yep. happened yep. outside, but also yep. the young people have certainly changed.
Sure.
Or have you realized any differences?
Yeah, I think, you know, there are differences. I arrived in Tezé in 1986 and the world has changed, you know, a lot since then.
That was the year when the Pope was there, isn't it?
It was the year when Pope John Paul II came. There's a story there as well. Because it was already clear that I was going to be a brother at that time. I was among the volunteers. And Brother Roger said to me, but when there's the meeting between the brother and the Pope, brothers and the Pope, come into the sacristy, you can listen. But I didn't dare go in. I stayed outside. And then I became a brother a few weeks after that. But, you know, it's true that my generation, we lived in fear of the Cold War, you know, of the nuclear bomb and all this. For a later generation, after 2001, you know, September 11th, it was fear of terrorism. Today, yeah, it's climate change, you know, which many of the 15, 16, 17-year-olds are extremely worried about. And yes, we tried to listen to that in Tezé, and to try to understand what is God saying to us through these concerns. It's important for us always to listen to those who come to visit us, not to kind of impose some kind of opinion upon them or a program upon them. I think one thing which I notice as well is that in my youth, we were very strong on social justice issues and perhaps there was less emphasis on prayer. You know, we were very active. And at that time, there was a need to speak a lot more about prayer. Today, many people have their own spirituality. The vertical connection is there between them and their God. But the idea of belonging to a community, of accepting to be part of a body of other believers, that's not so simple. You know, that's not so simple, and I think we see that today, a need to invite people, you know, to enter into community with others, to discover perhaps a place with a community of other believers, you know, in a parish, in a local church, and that's a challenge sometimes, because it's not easy for young people in the church today. How will they be welcomed? How will they be listened to?
You need a lot of social skills if you want to live peacefully in a community. Yeah. And if you look at the wider community and then the countries and yeah. the world, you need yeah. to have that connection with each other yeah. and to know how to be a bit diplomatic at times.
Yeah, it's true. And I think as well, how not to react in the moment. You know, we live in a very immediate world today. I write my response to the message I've just received straight away. And when another proposition comes up to me, I think, yes, that's interesting, and I forget the promise that I'd made earlier to go and see somebody. These are social changes. And I think, you know, one thing that Brother Roger impressed upon us was never to be negative towards the changes in society, but to try to understand how are we called to live the gospel within those changes, yeah?
And I also understand that there's an annual pilgrimage of trust, and trust is a very important yep. word and yep. concept, yep. because I think that in many ways people drift away from churches and say we don't trust in the organizations, mm. we just, yep. as you said, we trust yep. God,
yep.
but we don't trust anybody else.
Yep.
So if you come into a place like Tezé with
yep.
lots of people
mm.
and then building up trust.
Yep. No, and I think that's one of the miracles that we experience in Tezé. You know, as brothers, we don't really do much. We're there. You know, we pray. We offer hospitality. But it's incredible to see how, as the week goes on, young people find themselves able to trust each other, to be able to talk with complete strangers, to share something deep about their lives. And I think that's what we would hope for most of all, that they discover a sense of what it means to trust the other and to be trusted. Because it's trust that builds life, that constructs a community. And it's very fragile, of course. But if there are opportunities to discover that it is possible to live a life of trust, that gives courage. You know, that gives courage to continue.
Yeah, and it's, I think that communion is that, you have the word union and you have com.
Yep.
So it needs to be something where we can come together.
Yeah.
And I think it's wonderful that you're doing the ecumenical work without even saying ecumenical, because you just...
We welcome
everybody.
We offer a space where people can be together. You know, and you know, you mentioned the meeting that'll take place at the end of this year. It'll be in Poland, you know, this year in the town of Wrocław, where we were 30 years ago, just after the fall of the Berlin Wall. And suddenly we found ourselves in this place where, for the first time, young Europeans from all the different countries could come together. And it was an experience of building trust. You know,
do you also have to do a lot of work in security today to build up trust? Because in many places, like I remember 30 years ago, you could go to a big place and there was no checking of bags or so. But when you now go to Europe, everywhere you go, they would check your bags. And do you do some security checks?
Yeah, I mean, in France, in the last few years, there have been terrorist attacks. And the French government declared a state of emergency, which meant that in any place where there were large numbers of people gathering, there had to be a police or military presence, and that was so intense. And when people come into the church, we have teams of young people checking the bags. And we have to be realistic in those sort of things. And I think we accept that because we want Tese to be a safe space. And you have to respect the advice which is given to you. We don't live in some kind of holy bubble.
Thank you very much, Brother Matthew. Thank you for having come to the radio program. And I wish you all the best for your work.
Thank you very much.
In a very mystical place, in a spiritual place. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And what is coming up in our Mercy Spirituality Center? On Saturday, the 30th of November, 1:45 to 4 o'clock, Letitia Putin-Padat will facilitate an Ignatian contemplation for Advent. This will be a two-hour prayer experience in the tradition of St. Ignatius of Loyola. Please note that this program is not in our booklet. On Thursday, the 5th of December, from 10:30 to 12:30, I will give a presentation on nativity scenes. This is an opportunity to learn more about an ancient Catholic tradition that has spread to many countries in the world, each time adapting with special characteristics. And on Saturday, the 7th of December, from 9:30 to 3:30, Sister Catherine Wiles-Pickard is inviting us for a Mandela Reflection Day. And Wednesday, the 11th of December, 10:30 to 2:30, Sister Mary Catherwood is offering a Reflection Day with the title, Be Still and Know That I Am God, Prayer in the Spirit of Advent. Also, please note that our booklet, program booklets for 2020, are being printed. If you are not receiving one in your mail within the next couple of weeks, you're welcome to pick up a copy at our center or send us an email and ask for a copy. For all events at our center, please register with us per phone at Auckland 09-638-6238 or through our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. I wish you all a blessed Friday and a good week ahead. Thank you very much, Brother Matthew, for having come.
Thank you for your welcome.